Up next, it's hour one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Welcome to Happy Future Tuesday, where we look at the brighter side of the future. Except when it comes to, like, disasters like SpaceX. What, WTF, what's happened there, you know? Anyway, we'll look at that a little bit in a few minutes. Mrs. Future, welcome.
Thank you. Good to see you
once again on the show.
Always happy to be back at your side, my dear.
Yeah. We had a good weekend, really great. So we're happy. Even though it's kind of overcast and rainy in Santa Cruz, you know, it's still...
Winter is coming.
Exactly. So, as I was mentioning, you heard on the news, Harley Carnes was just talking about the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket disaster. And, you know, Coast to Coast and George Norrie have been talking about that little strange dot that flew by just before the spaceship exploded.
Yeah. There's been certainly a whole lot of photographs floating around on the web with this ominous dark shadow that could be a bird or could be a UFO or could be just about anything. Yeah.
What's interesting, when you really look at this, is that the actual procedure that was occurring, engineers were in the final stages of loading the liquid oxygen, the LOX, and the RP-1 kerosene propellants that power the Falcon 9 first stage for the static fire test. It's a full dress rehearsal. They were just in the phase of filling those tanks. And the explosion is a mystery because there was no hot spot. There was no flame to ignite it.
Mm-hmm. And none of the techs were smokers.
No, and there were a long way away. Mm-hmm. So in an unusual approach towards this, Elon Musk has asked to open source the investigation by calling in anyone that has any audio or photos or videos of the anomaly last week.
Yeah, this is so interesting that he would throw it open like this. It just shows you how out of the conventional box he is, that always in the past when there's been any kind of an issue with his rockets at SpaceX and their launches, he's always published a report really saying what level of technology failed, what they were looking for, what they learned from the event so it won't happen again. And basically what he's saying is we're mystified. We don't know what happened. It shouldn't have happened. We can't explain it. We need help.
One of the Ford Lightning masts was visibly burnt and blackened, much like what occurred after the catastrophic orbital ATK Antares rocket exploded from the NASA Wallops launch pad last October 28th, actually the year before, 2014.
Oh, so if that one was sabotaged, then maybe this one was sabotaged.
Sabotaged, well, lightning, right? I mean, I guess they have to eliminate the possibility of lightning.
No, lightning would not be a mystery. They would know that there was a lightning strike.
They would have said it right away.
Yeah.
So the other thing that they mentioned was that there was a sound. There was a sound that happened just before the explosion.
Sure.
Like another sound. They're trying to analyze what that was. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was sabotage, it'd probably be some kind of remote controlled ignition thing. Mm-hmm. It could be very simple, just something that gave a spark. Even, but it made a sound. So, I mean, I don't know what that is. Anyway, so they're looking for audio to see if they can identify what that sound might have represented.
Hmm. Yeah, it boggles the mind to have such a huge fire when there was really nothing ignited. There was nothing about the rocket that was even in ready mode. They were fueling it up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. And
you think about somebody dropping a cigarette on a gasoline flame, on a gasoline fueling line or something like that, but just, it's really curious.
So if you look at it from a potentially sabotage point of view, what was it carrying? It was carrying the AMOS-6 communication satellite built by Israel Aerospace Industries for Space Communications Limited, working with Zuckerberg, Facebook, to provide communication services for Africa, the Middle East, and Europe.
Oh, so somebody does not want us spying on Africa with an open source communications network, huh?
Well, I'm just saying you can spin whatever tale you wish to say, but the AMOS, A-M-O-S 6, mm-hmm. was taken out.
Curiouser and curiouser.
Yeah, we'll have to keep tabs on this to see what's happening.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, good. I hope that Elon gets his wish and that he finds some clues in the open source contributions. He also brought in some government investigation and some government agencies to investigate, right? Or he invited
them? Well,
he's
asked the full support of NASA and of the Air Force, which also have some investigative capabilities down there, and to join in the investigation. Mm-hmm. Other agencies wish to invest their time into this, right. because it's a genuine mystery. Where did that flame source come from?
Right. Yeah, and how to avoid it next time, right? How do you know it's not just going to happen again?
Yeah, because when they've had accidents before, they've had enough information coming in from the sensors to kind of know what went wrong.
Yeah.
So this one is a little more complicated than that.
Right. Yeah, after looking at the obvious culprits, they found nothing.
Nothing!
All right, folks, you're listening to the Dr. Future Show here on KSEO, so we'll see you after the break.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. SpaceX had some new competition this week when Blue Origin announced their new big New Glenn rocket for satellite and crew launches.
All right, Amazon getting into the big boys club. They're not just going to the horizon, they're going further, huh?
Billionaire entrepreneur Jeff Bezos announced on September 12th a massive new reusable rocket. Actually, a family of rockets in development for his private spacecraft company, Blue Origin. The new rockets are called New Glenn, named after John Glenn, the first guy that circled the Earth back in 1962, I believe. They will be used to launch satellites and people into space, according to Bezos. In his letter from Blue Origin, he unveiled an artist concept of 2- and 3-stage versions of the New Glenn rocket. Both will be taller than SpaceX's Falcon Heavy and the United Launch Alliance's Delta IV Heavy. And the 3-stage one kind of reminds me of the NASA Saturn V, the rocket that boosted humans to the moon back in the 70s. It's a massive craft. We have pictures of these on the website at drfutureshow.com/links. You can check that out. It's a space.com piece called Blue Origin announces their Big Glenn rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff is starting to step up more to the plate here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Elon's been mostly hitting the news, but Jeff's getting in more and more into the limelight.
All right.
These new rockets.
Private enterprise heading to space.
Yeah. Getting serious here, folks.
We've got Mr. PayPal and we've got Mr. Amazon duking it out. See who can get there first.
Meanwhile, out near the orbit of Mars, the Rosetta orbiter will soon be crashing into its comet and dying.
Oh.
You hear about that?
The Rosetta orbiter, last week we were talking about the Rosetta discovering Philae, right?
That's right. The Rosetta is circling an asteroid, and as it circles, it has been trying to find its long-lost little offshoot.
A
little probe that it had sent out about a year ago onto the surface of the asteroid. Unfortunately, the little asteroid got fired into a little crevice and wasn't able to get any solar energy. And so had a slow death. Took 60 hours before the batteries gave out.
Oh,
and they were trying to find it ever since.
The first shipwreck in space. The first asteroid shipwreck down the hole.
So the Rosetta orbiter has been looking for the last year for its probe. And they finally found it last week. I think we announced it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
They are now going to crash the main orbiter into the asteroid. Now it's the end of the mission. So it's going to join its long-lost probe.
All right. And both crashing into the asteroid. Poor asteroid, huh? Didn't know it was heading for a couple of...
It's got two humans on it.
...man-made invasions.
Yeah. The Shurimov-Gerashimenko.
Oh, come on.
Shurimov-Gerashimenko.
Speak your Russian. You must know Russian better than that, Dr. Future.
Yes. It's kind of cute. Somebody put legs on it, and it looks kind of like a bulldog.
Oh. What did they put on Rosetta?
Yeah, no, on the asteroid.
Oh.
The CG asteroid, let's call it that way. Okay. Kind of fits it because it is kind of, you know, with this bulldog look, it looks more like computer graphics.
Oh, really? And it's a picture?
Yeah, a real cute little picture of a bulldog asteroid.
All right. Well, listen, let's say hello to Richard in Santa Cruz who wants to say something about interplanetary travel.
All right.
Hi, Richard. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Hey, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I was just wondering, first off, I wanted to maybe make a little correction. The little asteroid vehicle that landed in a crevice, it was able to pick up enough sunlight for the solar cells to repeat back to us. I might be wrong on that, but I thought that was the exact...
Well, they said that it had been in a crevice and that it wasn't getting much sun. That's my understanding of it. Maybe it got a little bit. I know I remember 60 hours was what I read about how much power it actually had. Perhaps as it gets closer to the sun, it's been getting a little more sun. Maybe that's the case here.
Yeah. Be sure and turn down your radio, okay, Richard?
Yeah. It gives you a feedback loop, which is not a lot of fun to listen to for
yeah,
us.
I'm sorry. I've got alphabet.gov going on in my family, so you're going to get a certain amount of feedback. Sorry about that feedback loop.
No problem. So do you have another question?
But yeah, I just was wondering, if we're spending all this effort to, like, say, go to Mars, and it, as we saw with our rover, it's gravel. Let's just put it the way it is. It's gravel, and the atmosphere is gone. So what are we trying to prove? Why are we trying to waste all this money? We could be spending all this money trying to figure out how to save our atmosphere. And I was just wondering if you could...
That's a fairly commonly asked question. And I think that NASA has actually put out a big chart showing how you get about a 4 to 5 to 1 back in your investments in NASA projects. They lead to a lot of new technologies that turn out to save us a lot of time and money in the long run. You know, solar panels being a prime example of one of the things that NASA has developed.
Yeah.
There's a list of stuff. It's unbelievably long.
Yeah. And when you're investing in research into the unknown and the yet to be explored, it doesn't have any kind of certainty to it. And the idea of investment is always about making a bet on the future. It's not an either or proposition. You can't either invest in travel off planet or farming on the planet or sustainability on the planet. What you want is to invest in both and think about it as democracy. And people who are interested in this kind of exploration get to put their resources into that basket. And people who are interested in working the soil and making the planet more livable get to put their resources in that basket.
And just the meteorological advances alone help us able to look at droughts and understanding storms and looking at the flow of the weather, which is actually worth untold millions in saving people the disaster experiences.
Yeah. Thanks for the question, Richard. What else you got, Dr. Future?
So this crash is going to happen by the end of the month. The Rosetta Orbiter will crash into its comet, and we'll say goodbye. We'll say goodbye to that dear creature. It'll be gone. We'll look at other things like NASA's Jupiter Juno spacecraft. 2 weeks ago, it started sending back its first pictures live from Jupiter. It's now starting to publish some of that information. There's some really interesting sound effects coming from Jupiter. Sounds right out of Forbidden Planet. If you like interesting space noises, we have a link to that under the NASA Juno spacecraft.
Oh, article. I think we should play that noise when we have a chance, Dr. Future. Maybe not right this second, but, you know, maybe before or after one of the next breaks would be good to play.
I'll see if I can find it for him, plug it into the network.
What Juno recorded was actually electromagnetic radiation from Jupiter's magnetic storms. And then it took like 24 hours of recorded radiation and then translated that signal, that radio signal, into a speeded up version of it and turned it into a radio sound wave that we could listen to. So we've got like 24 hours on Jupiter compressed into a 1 minute song.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. The
mission's radio plasma wave experiment, or known as WAVES, recorded this ghostly sounding transmission from the planet.
Yeah.
And though we've known about them for a while, this is the best yet.
Right. going to be very cool.
They detect the energetic particles that generate the massive auroras which encircle Jupiter's north pole. They're the strongest auroras in the solar system.
Wow, amazing.
So the recent flyby was just the first one of 30. We'll get 30 more interesting clumps of data about Jupiter over the next few years.
Cool. So what else you got?
On the home front, there's been a few things about the car world, especially autonomous vehicles and electricity are really coming more and more to the foreground. The Chevy Bolt, for example, will be coming out very soon. It's trying to take on Tesla, you know, the Tesla Model 3, which isn't planning to come out for at least another year. The Bolt, however, will be out this fall, and with an EPA-certified range of 238 miles on a charge, pure electric car, with a base price of under $30,000 after tax credits, it just might make some traction.
Hmm. Okay. So the Bolt is all electric. It's not a hybrid.
Not the Volt, but the Bolt. The Volt is Chevy's hybrid design, and the Bolt is purely the electric design.
And it can go 238 miles.
238 miles. So there's only a few out right now. The front seats are highly engineered. They saved a lot of weight without sacrificing comfort. They're very thin, very light, more springs, less cushioning than normal seats. Mm-hmm. All this was to try to get over the 200-mile range, you know, to really lighten everything. It kind of reminds me of the hotels that were on the Zeppelins back in the 30s, where they created pianos made out of aluminum so that they were super lightweight in the lounge area in the Zeppelins, because light was so important.
Oh, boy.
So important.
All right. Well, listen, folks, we're going to go for the CBS News break, and we're going to come back with more of the Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Ah, yes. Our buddies at Tesla are in the news today. They are improving their autopilot, of course. And the big news there is that they're going to increase their reliance on radar. Radar, yes. They issued a software update that will improve the radar systems in its electric cars to address the safety concerns about the semi-autonomous autopilot mode, the famous mode that accidentally killed somebody last May. Meanwhile, Elon has been continuing to defend the technology's role in saving lives, because even with the death rate of autonomous cars are less than half of normal cars. The mortality rate, I guess you might call it. Elon said that the autopilot will rely more on radar, not just cameras, to help the car see better and avoid collisions. Now, the radar has the advantages because, hey, it can see through fog, it can see through rain, it can see through snow. Its only problem is that it can't always correctly identify objects. So you end up getting what's called false positives, seeing things that you think are there that aren't.
That's Tesla's the problem with radar. Car is going to start seeing things
well,
that
radar
aren't
by itself. Radar.
I think that's better than what happened before, where it didn't see something that was there.
Yeah. Well, it can be. It can be. It could cause unnecessary braking. They use the radar in combination with cameras. And that's the important thing. Other groups, like the Uber people, are looking at LIDAR, which is another form of radar, but using light frequencies instead of radio frequencies. Mm-hmm. However, radar technology is advancing, and Elon feels that that's best for Tesla at this point. It'll help the computer on board to build a three-dimensional map of the world as you go by it. So you see objects moving in it, and you see buildings and lights and objects included, would include other cars, would include pedestrians, bicycles, that sort of thing. Ideally, the car should hit the brakes correctly, even, according to Musk, even if a UFO were to land on the freeway in zero visibility.
That's putting a lot of power into the hands of this radar.
Even
what if
the
UFO couldn't be detected by LIDAR or radar?
Well, you know, let's not go there just yet. That would not be good to have another fatality because we crashed into a UFO.
That would be
not
terrible.
Good. Yeah. Not good. Tesla will be able to bounce the radar under a vehicle, in front of it, which is kind of cool. You can bounce it under a vehicle and get a reflection. And that will help provide still braking for an unseen obstacle. I guess if you bounce the radar under a car, you might be able to see the car in front of it. That'd be interesting.
Say that again.
Usually radar would be aimed right across and you'd like reflect back cars and pedestrians that you're driving by. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you have a radar that's also aimed underneath cars. Mm-hmm. So it bounces off the road and then picks up the car in front of the car in front of you.
Wow.
You know, so you have bouncing radar.
I see. So it looks for the car in front of you.
And the car in front of that by bouncing underneath the car that's just in front of you.
All right. It'll be able to avoid those pileups.
Well, it'll know more. Uh-huh. You know, hopefully it will know what to do with that data.
Right.
But all these things are coming out of that fatal Florida collision that's got more focus on and safety.
Mm-hmm. So they're adding some new bells and whistles.
Yes, like bouncing radar. And the laser sensors, the LIDAR, are, as I said, what that looks like Google is going for more.
Right.
So that's a little update in that arena.
Right.
Isn't that cool?
Okay.
Meanwhile, you know, the Google project is kind of getting, people are wondering about them.
The autonomous car.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Chris Urmson, he was a robotics expert that used to run the Google self-driving car, used to believe that by the time his son reached driving age in 2019, that the technology would be available so that his teenager would never have to get a driving test.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, he's kind of gone on to other projects. Even though Google's project started early in 2009, they just aren't pushing it like Uber is.
Right. For them, it's more of a sideline. And yeah, for Uber, it's kind of the whole Megillah.
Yeah. And Tesla. Tesla has given partially autonomous features to 70,000 cars. Google has a fleet, but, you know, what do they have? 50 maybe. And they've driven them 1.8 million miles in public road tests, mm-hmm. Including driving in the snow, mm-hmm. including developing maps of cities like San Francisco so the autonomous cars can easily drive. They know the peculiarities of that town.
Right. So really, the focused businesses, the people who are solely identifying as autonomous car or car manufacturers, are going to win the race. And even though Google has deep pockets and
a lot of R&D.
Focus on the research. Yeah, they can open the door and then other people can go through it.
They're more cautious about rolling out new technology early, too, especially after that glass internet eyewear project of 2013.
Really?
Which I love
Google
glass,
is not proud of Google Glass because
they
took the brunt of the nerd rejection, right? I mean, when you say the main thing that was rejected about glass was that it was too nerdy.
It kind of made you look more like a cyborg, even though they had some beautiful models.
People just aren't ready to look like they love technology yet.
Not that
much. Fashion statement.
The timing is everything.
Right.
It also looks.
It still gets you beat up in a biker bar.
Yeah. Pretty much. There's a higher bar now for projects at Google that require also clearer paths to profitability before they're approving more funding or expansion.
Right.
And possibly the biggest drag on the Google autonomous car program is the sheer scope of their ambitions. Basically, their aim was to revolutionize transportation through full autonomy. So the software must be trained thoroughly to handle all possible eventualities. Meanwhile, there are already methods to make self-driving cars good rather than perfect. So going more with the good model, we have Uber, we have Mercedes-Benz, we have Tesla, we have the Volvo Car Group, all beginning to surpass Google. Never mind Apple's secret car project.
Never mind.
Never mind.
Well, Apple will have the same problem that Google has, which is they may get the patents, but they might not be able to roll out the technology.
Yeah.
Right.
Or NextEV in San Jose. Mm-hmm. You know, for doing new electric sports
cars. Oh, right. NextEV. Sure. Know. Yeah.
It's heating up and the horses are running.
Okay.
The one that's got the actual cars on the road right now really is Uber. And they've already deployed a fleet of 50 cars in Pittsburgh. They're starting to collect data mm-hmm. about that. Of course, they have a real driver in all the cars. But if you order an Uber, you might get an autonomous car with a driver.
Boy. Right. So I would love to hear from someone in Pittsburgh about what's going on with the Ubers there.
Have you driven the autonomous Uber car yet? It's Volvo technology.
Do the drivers let you know that they're driving autonomously? Or do you find out only if you ask?
I guess if you find out if you ask.
Yeah. So there you go. If you're listening in Pittsburgh, be sure and ask your Uber driver who's in charge of the wheel.
the iPhone 7. We were going to actually probably not get one this year, right?
Up until before the show when I dropped my iPhone for the first time, and now I have a crushed screen. And of course, it's a few years old and it's due for an upgrade. It was so great and it didn't have any cracks. And I was just like, well, do I really need to get an upgrade?
Yeah. Mrs. Future had the 2014 model.
Yeah. Now I feel like, well, the 6S Plus. I guess the universe is trying to tell me something.
The 6 Plus, excuse me.
Yeah. And I'm going to look into the Apple trade-in policy. Like, since this thing has a broken screen now, I think I'm going to see if I can trade it in.
Yeah, what do you do when your screen breaks? I mean, I was hoping to ask Taylor.
I can't believe Taylor didn't make it here today. Yeah. Taylor, what were you thinking?
Well, I think they have screen protection.
You mean I have to use the phone? I can't just ask you on the show?
No, you can't. Now you got to be like a normal person
broken.
Now. I know, right? It's great. In the past, we've always found that either the stores will replace it or there was a company in Cupertino near Apple.
Yeah, you can always find somebody who's in the business of upgrading the screen or making it better. Although they keep redesigning the phone and making it harder and harder to change out the parts.
Yeah, the 6 Plus, I think it's okay. I think the 6 Plus S is more complicated because they introduced that 3D depth function on the iPhones. And that is a whole other magilla in terms of complexity.
Okay.
And so it costs an extra, probably cost you at least $250 to replace the screen. It's just insane for what it seems like a piece of glass.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, the repair business is one of those things about technology that companies build in the margin.
Especially fixing things that aren't supposed to be repaired.
Right. No, just throw the phone away. We'll take your $700. Right.
Well, there's got to be some super material that will replace glass. Mm-hmm. That's what it's coming down to there. Mm-hmm. I mean, as important as battery tech is, and I've got a great battery story to share with you as well.
Oh, do you?
The glass is the vulnerable part. If we don't have to fix anything in the phone, change the battery, none of that, not even have the headphone jack, which is the iPhone 7, right? No headphone jack. Simpler and simpler, less things to go wrong, less things to muck with.
Well, I'll tell you, the headphone jack is not getting good press. We're going to have to talk about this after the break. Let's go. We got a few commercials, and then we'll come right back with the Dr. Future Show. So stay tuned. Thanks.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yeah, we had just been talking about some of the new Apple announcements last week. Next week, we'll probably go in more depth about it when we bring in Taylor about that. But meanwhile, as I said, we were not going to get one until we had Mrs. Future's phone break today. So we may end up getting one, and we'll be able to give you a more firsthand report on this new, especially the camera. The new camera on the 7S Plus looks phenomenal.
Which I was really, I mean, I was totally on the fence just because the camera, I have so wanted a telephoto lens on my phone for a long time.
Right.
And not just a blurry zoom in with your
digital
two-finger
zoom, but actual optical zoom.
Right. So
they do it by having two cameras, one wide angle, one zoom. And you're able to combine those two to create one image. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that I really liked about the Apple announcements was the swim-proof version of their watch, the new Series 2 watch, which has the built-in GPS. That's kind of cool. And also the phone itself is supposed to be able to be submerged for half an hour or so. So if you drop it in a puddle or a toilet or something, you can retrieve it. It should be okay. Especially with the wireless. I don't know if you drop the headphones in. I don't know if the headphones are waterproof.
Ooh.
But the watch is relatively waterproof, and the phone is now.
Yeah, it sounds like the watch you could wear scuba diving. I mean, it has some insane rating. You know, it can go down 200 feet or something.
150 feet, I think.
Uh-huh, right. Yeah. So they really want to get into some new worlds there with the technology.
It would appear, Mrs. Future. We'll find out. We'll get that. The other big thing is that they give you more memory. They went from a minimum of 16 to 32 gigabytes. So the cheapest one you get is 32 gigs, which is good. It's still primitive. Mm-hmm. I would recommend at least 64 or 128, or if you can afford it, the 256 gig, because more and more stuff requires
more and more memory.
Memory, right.
More and more RAM.
If you get into the camera, you're going to want it.
Yeah. And especially if you like to do video and you like
especially
to...
audio, and those things take up a lot of space.
Yeah, definitely. Although I suppose if you're into Snapchat and things that, you know, go away after you've sent them, maybe you can deal with less space.
Yeah.
But if you want to keep everything like I do.
Yes. Get as much
space
as you can afford.
You never have too much.
And the thing about Apple is that they don't let you to expand it later. It can only be expanded when you buy it.
That's right. You got to make the commitment and stick with it.
That's right.
That's right. You'll be rewarded. Let's have Skip from Santa Cruz.
Skip.
Who has been so patient and persistent. Hi, Skip. Welcome to the show. What you got for us?
How you doing?
So Android phones, one half of the market, it's overheating, lithium batteries. I was wondering if you could speak of that.
Oh, the whole Samsung
thing? Let's talk about it. We have an article on the Samsung. We have some pictures of some Samsung buyers.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, the Galaxy X.
Thanks for asking. Do you have one of those, Skip?
Well, people are being told to, like, turn their cell phones in, and that's, like, one half of the market. Like, there's half Apple, half Samsung.
Apple's very happy about that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's very sad for Samsung, and it seems to be a battery issue, which is an extremely serious thing. We were looking at some pictures this morning where it looks like a car was burnt down. Somebody's bedroom was devastated. It was horrible. What they recommend is that you not charge the phone, because that's when the problem seems to occur, is when you're charging your phone. Yeah,
that so it overheats when it's charging?
Yeah.
But you have to charge your phone if the battery's dead.
Yes.
So you mean don't leave it on charge?
No, you're supposed to trade it in, bring it into a center and get another
one. So if you have a phone, use it until the battery's gone and then take it in. That's a real good solution.
Well, that's one procedure you could do. You're probably, you could maybe find out, call up your carrier and see what their procedures are. I'm sure it's different for T-Mobile or AT&T or Verizon. Sprint, they all have their, you know, their people that are dealing with this issue. Mm-hmm. So call them, you know, or go down to the store, find out, WTF, you know, what you should do.
Anyway, I put it out there to the radio audience, Skip, because, you know, we're devoted Apple people, so I don't have a firsthand story to tell you. But since we were about to talk about the problem and you just brought it in, like, okay, what do we do with these Android phones? The question is posed. It'd be good to find out what people are actually doing about it.
It's obviously a battery issue and there's pictures of it exploding in people's hands in the middle of a cafe. I don't know how they did that. Look at that. That sounds like something beyond just charging at this point. So it may be getting more serious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just search for the Galaxy S7 fires and you'll get dozens of them.
Yeah.
They have one handset that ballooned in size before melting into a cloud of white fumes.
All right, so there is a recall, mm-hmm. and you do take it back to whoever you bought it from. I guess they'll recommend what's the next best thing. The tech who was here before us, Jason, said he has got a Windows phone, which he just loves. So I don't know. You may want to come up with some kind of temporary solution rather than getting a new lithium battery problem with your Android.
Yes, switch to a Windows phone. It was cheap, $50, you know. He's happy. You say it's the batteries, right? It's cheap, long-lasting, sustainable battery. It's really what we need. And and ones that don't explode. That'd be very nice. So the University of Waterloo chemists have developed a prototype of a long-lasting, safe, non-explodable zinc ion battery.
Oh,
it costs
really?
About half the price of lithium ion batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And it could help shift the transition from fossil fuel to electric, because it's ideally suited not for small little hand devices, but for large power plants.
That is not going to help us with our cell phones.
No, well, not directly. But it will help in terms of a new battery type. They say the initial version is for, say, you have large, massive solar arrays, and they don't give power at night, right? Because it's only sun in the daytime. So they come along with
storage,
decent batteries that can store massive amounts of energy. And then you go from solar to batteries. Then at night, you feed the batteries. In this piece from Kurzweil AI, they talk about it in the context of power plants. But it seems to me that it could be excellent for neighborhood or even individual home usage.
Mm-hmm.
once the technology has been evolved.
Yeah, I'm kind of imagining a world where solar power is kind of like mailboxes, you know? They're clustered in neighborhoods and people can go get their own solar power. They can have their solar address and it can be maintained in a kind of a local community way according to people being able to talk to their provider.
And technically, they'll combine the battery with the solar panel.
Right, right. If you want to, if you need more power, you just bring in a new battery and
so they'll just
your capacity goes up.
Just call it a solar generator and then you charge it up and it gives power and
right.
it keeps it charged. You know,
right.
It should be all self-contained.
Right, yeah. So we could have like neighborhood solar collectives.
Yeah, initially, until it gets powerful enough so that each individual can generate enough power for themselves and for what they're doing.
Sure. Yeah, well, that's the rooftop model. If you can put it on your rooftop, that's great. But somebody still has to maintain it. You know?
Rooftop.
Technology is complicated.
I'm talking about your back, man. I'm talking about your clothes. Your clothes will be generating power before this is over. Your hat.
You're talking about serious yeah. efficiency here.
Oh,
do you
yeah.
know how many,
I mean,
how much clothes?
Surface, right? It's all surface, just wasting away. Just people look at your clothes. Yeah,
but
that,
like
that's
right
maybe
now,
1% of the time.
But there's not even enough surface area but, on your car.
Currently.
Yeah.
Currently. We're talking a little bit further out there. I'd say maybe 10 years. All right? All right? Can I go 10 years with you, Mrs. Fisher?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I can't wait.
Solar,
okay, I'll mark it on the calendar. We'll
solar
have
powered
a solar
clothes,
anniversary.
Solar-powered clothes. Power all your devices just by wearing your favorite jacket.
Cool.
You know, washable.
Hey.
Yeah, so even washable by 10 years.
All right. Wearable tech coming
yeah.
in. Solar power generation on my sleeve.
Yeah.
I like it.
Me
okay.
too.
All right, folks, it's time to head off to our top of the hour break, and we'll be back with some interesting folks who are
yeah.
putting together some cool travel packages on the Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
It's our guest hour.
KSCO, Santa Cruz.